This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Noe Tanigawa. Today, we're bringing you the highlights from a recent town hall gathering. The forum was brought to you by Zocalo Public Square, the Daniel K. Inoue Institute, and HPR. And the starting point for our discussion was this question. Will Pigeon survive the 21st century? The panelists were Sarah Roberts, sociolinguist and scholar of American Pidgin languages. She's familiar with Hawaii. She's got relatives here and did graduate work at UH Manoa. Hawaii Governor John D. Waihe III, first state governor of Hawaiian ancestry. He was born in Honoka'a and was instrumental in making Hawaiian an official state language. Katie Drager, co-director of the University of Hawaii Sato Center for Pidgin, Creole, and Dialect Studies, was on the panel. And finally, comedian Andy Bumatai, a model Pidgin speaker, even in body language. We know that now. If you need lessons in Pidgin and anything else local, I highly recommend his YouTube series, Daily Pidgin. I moderated the evening and began by asking Sarah about the earliest records of Pidgin in Hawaii.
Well, the earliest text I can find that is recognizably Pidgin from 1791. I've done my research by looking at any old documentation of Pidgin, looking at court records, newspapers, high school yearbooks, anything that has information about the history of the language.
What was Pidgin like in 1791?
When we talk about Pidgin, we have to also recognize that there were two different varieties of Pidgin. There was one based on the native Hawaiian language and another one based on English. And they coexisted for much of the 19th century. In fact, when the sugar plantations first really took off after 1876, when they brought in a lot of the Chinese and Portuguese and Japanese labor, what they learned on the plantations was actually this Hawaiian pidgin form of the Hawaiian language. And then after the overthrow of the monarchy, that very much shifted to English as being the dominant language that was used by immigrants in Hawaii.
So it went from being Hawaiian Pidgin to Pidgin English?
Yes,
Pidgin
Hawaiian although Pidgin they English. Both coexisted during that period. But it was more in like the towns in like Honolulu where English Pidgin was more spoken. But once Pidgin Hawaiian kind of died out, then a newer form of this English Pidgin was used throughout the plantations.
Yeah, we've been talking about how Pidgin's so different across the islands. I mean, Governor, you grew up on the Big Island, Honoka'a, plantation
right.
town. I mean, what kind of pidgin was spoken?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I'm feeling the same anxiety sitting between two PhDs that I used to feel back in Honoka'a school, sitting between two teachers who I knew were going to correct my English. You see, but it's so ironic that we have come so far that I'm worried that they're going to correct my pidgin.
Well, you can turn around and correct theirs.
So I'm going to try my best to remember. What was it like? It was everyday language. I mean, there was no distinction. And I think they also were like different gradations of words. So I don't know whether or not, at least for me, when I look back on it, whether or not it was just about vocabulary. And I guess we were talking about this earlier. It's also, I think Pidgin was a language that people used that also expressed a kind of culture. It was a way of, they spoke, but the way they structured sentences would actually indicate value of some kind. Okay. And if you heard it, and that coupled with enunciation, see, I learned something. Enunciation was important because if you enunciated, the sound of the pronunciation of a word would indicate whether somebody knew pidgin or not.
Oh.
You know, and one of the worst things, which, you know, some Punahou educated politicians do, is they would go before a local crowd and try to speak pidgin. You know Andy, right?
Oh.
And it's just like, because they would pronounce the words, you know, perfectly. And somebody else, like, you know, would say, hey, governor, say something in Pidgin. Look, what for? And the guy would say, well, you know, I think the people should know, you know, what you say. Nah, no need. And he doesn't even know what I'm saying. No. I just did it, you know? So a lot of it, in my opinion, when we were growing up, a lot of what we call Pidgin had to do with sound and the way you express a value. Huh. See, so, you know, yeah, you would say more better or some more better, which means a little bit less more better, but, you know. But you would do it, what that was expressing is our way of, it's almost Japanese in some ways, because it's our way of saying something modestly that's enormous. You know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that. And the master of doing that was frankly Danny Noy. And if I have time tonight, I'll tell you how somebody who spoke perfect English could actually speak to a pidgin speaking crowd. And he was fantastic at it.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about sort of this code switching that pidgin involves, right? Because it's a constituency that understands it. You folks have studied that, Katie, at the Hawaii Center.
Yeah, we talk about that ability a lot, how people are able to shift between different parts of their linguistic repertoire. So can, you know, people talk about it as turning on their pidgin, turning it on and off. Even within pidgin, kind of having it be heavier or not. And
according to what?
It depends on a lot of different things. So who someone is talking to, if they're local or not, or if they're good friends or not, or what the situation is like. So we try and do interviews with people to be able to study their pidgin, but one of the ways to get people to turn off their pidgin is to take them to the university to do an interview and turn on the recorder. So it ends up being really tricky to get the kind of data that we need to be able to study pidgin. Yeah.
Where do you have to take them? But I mean, Andy, did you grow up speaking the same pidgin you think to everybody?
Well, you know, when I grew up in Waianae,
yeah, right.
And right there, you know, when I grew up, it was Waianae, and now it's Waianae. So not only, and we spoke about this backstage, Governor, you know, not only did the pidgin change, but the Hawaiian change for the better. People started, you know, honoring the Okinas and such. But when we spoke pidgin back then, we didn't know we were speaking pidgin. It's just how we spoke. It's not until we got to town, when the waitress would say, "I'm sorry, what do you want?" You know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad was in the service, so we lived in San Francisco. I didn't get to Hawaii till like the fourth grade, right? So I used to hear my dad and all his friends speaking pidgin, right? And I thought, wow, they're speaking some weird baby talk, you know. But I knew it and I understood it. And then I got here to Hawaii and went, the whole state talks like that. You know? But, and then it became, like you were saying, an identifier. You know? I mean, I do this thing in my act where I go, if you go to the mainland and you go to a Starbucks and you see a brother behind the counter and you don't know, you know, if he's local or Mexican, right? So, right? So what you do is you throw out small kind pidgin to see if he bite. Right? They go, yes, can I help you? Are you, bro? And if they go, I'm sorry, what? You go, I'm sorry, I'll have a coffee latte.
Yeah, right. You could be in a poke shop in L.A. Same thing.
Same thing. But if the brother bite, oh, wow, you from Hawaii? Yeah, me, that's a boom. Game on. Right? And, of course, there's always the howlies behind you going, they're talking about us. Right?
No.
But, you know, more than a communication tool, it became an identifier. It was like, where are you from? And to the point, like backstage, if you say, I shave, oh, you from Hilo, eh?
Yeah.
Honoka'a or whatever.
I shave, for sure.
I shave instead of shave ice.
You know, what does it say about cultures when they mix and come up with a language? I mean, what are we saying about ourselves when we use pidgin?
Yeah, and I should first say that what we refer to as pidgin is actually, linguistically, we refer to it as a Creole, which means it's a native language. People speak it in the home, and it's different than what it originally was, which is...
some ad hoc,
exactly.
No structure, kind of just...
Right, and it, in the process of becoming a native language, it has been enriched by grammatical and phonological structures from Hawaiian, from Chinese and Portuguese and Japanese. And
like what?
Well, for instance, walk feet. I don't know how many of you know the expression walk feet. That comes from Hawaiian, hele vavai. So that's what we refer to as kind of a pretty transparent word for word gloss from Hawaiian.
Walk feet
to
take
a walk to go. It's an older expression, maybe not more in the current generation. But then you have other grammatical structures. For instance, the use of the word stay before a verb. So stay means, you know, to be somewhere. But if you use it before a verb, right, it means a continuous action.
Even if that word is go.
Right. Exactly. Stay go. And this this comes from Portuguese. This is from Portuguese. Estar has very similar function to stay in Hawaii Creole.
Oh, so interesting. You know, I was reading about that way that we add yeah, or at the end of a sentence maybe. Is that uniquely pidgin?
What?
You know, well, I mean, when you say this... this is really good, or
I always say that pidgin contains the broken shards of the Hawaiian language, because if you say like what's your name in Hawaiian, you say waikoinoa, and you go up. In English you would go, hey, what's your name? You go down.
Yeah.
Right, so in pidgin you go, hey bro, what's your name? You go up, right? Because it's like Hawaiian.
That's
right?
Kind of what I was talking about when you indicate value too. Uh-huh. You know, when you talk about stuff. You know, like Inouye, I heard him give a speech once, which is masterful. Yeah. And everybody in the audience know. I mean, Danny Inouye spoke better English than I don't know any Holly who speaks better English than Danny Inouye. or maybe I should say any Native American original speaker who speaks better English than Danny Inouye. But he would talk about his experience going to World War II and the formation of the 442nd. And when he would describe that story, he would talk about how they were all mustering to go out on the ship, to ship out to a training camp. And his father walked up to him and he said to him, you know, don't make me shame, or don't bring shame on the family. And then Danny Inouye went on and talked about his experience in the war and how much that meant to him. And then but in the middle of this speech, which was just immaculately spoken, and then he said something like, just before, in the middle, and he would say, and yet when it was all pow, I think I made my father proud. I think I made my father proud, okay? But if you really listen, the mastery of that was the first was obvious. When he said pow, all pow, he could have said all finish. But everybody in the audience who was from the 442nd immediately knew he was one of them again. Yeah. Because only in Hawaii would you use that particular phrase. Mm-hmm. But that's like the first cut. Actually, if you look at the way he structured that story, when he talked about no make shame, don't make me shame, every kid in Hawaii grew up with the idea, no make A. Mm-hmm. No make A. You don't bring shame on your family. So the language actually no make A is a value system that was being expressed that had been incorporated and accepted by all groups. And then when he went on and at the end he says, I think I made my father proud. Now, if he was from Texas, which I can't believe got to be the most sexiest language, but if he was from Texas, he would say, I know I made my daddy proud. You know? But if Inouye said, I think I made my father proud, because if he said, I know, hey, look at big head, bro.
Yeah.
You know? So you don't, we also use the language to express the value systems. That's my current big thing. Yeah. The value systems that each ethnic group contributed to our society. And I think that what Pidgin does, and if you know, you really understand its function, it is a sense of localism. What is Hawaii when you strip it of all its various parts and you put it all back together? What is the sum of our society? The sum of our society, for years we used to talk about the fact that here the differences make us special and the rest. Well, I'm suggesting when we study the language and we understand the values we was expressing, we also have a whole lot of commonality, which we all agree on. And I think the language of localism is Pidgin. And that's why I hope it perpetuates forever.
But you know, but you touched on something that's very important, and that is the difference between shame and embarrassment, you know, which culturally I think is shared a lot by Japanese, where you say, oh, wow, I was all shame. And that's because of how you reflect on your family, as opposed to, oh, I was so embarrassed.
Which you suck on yourself.
That's on yourself. And you know, when you say make a, you talk about a Pidgin thing. That, of course, means make ass, right? Because you're going to make an ass out of yourself. No make a, no make ass, right? Well, remember when you were a kid and somebody do something stupid and you go, hana ukulele, hana ukulele, right? If you think about it, what they're saying is hana okole, which hana is make and okole is ass. Make a. So when they go, hana ukulele, hana ukulele, right? So it's interesting, again,
how this all evolved.
But speaking of evolution, I mean, you're pointing out to me sort of the class consciousness that Pidgin is about. It's about a certain class identification. Is that correct in Hawaii?
Yeah, I'd say so. Pidgin, I think, has what in linguistics we would call covert prestige. And this is a kind of prestige that's associated with local values. So things like here in Hawaii, that would be personal connections between people, humility. And so it gets tied with these kinds of meanings associated with it. Not saying something when maybe we both know the answer and maybe it's a little bit taboo, or I shouldn't maybe be talking about it. I can kind of slip in some vague language that an outsider might not understand, right?
The kind.
Or
big body. How's that? I mean, you know, because you keep referring to this sort of little bit of humility that's also involved in this Pidgin, making things not blasting, but making just a little understatement, possibly. What are some other characteristics of Pidgin in Hawaii?
Okay, Professor.
You're on.
Yeah.
No me contará.
Go for it. Divo.
Yeah. Well, I guess going on the humility kind of idea, or the kind of shared knowledge kind of idea. So if there's someone, this is something that English speakers get wrong, especially if they move here, they're from outside. They might say things that more than they need to say, right? Oh. Name people who maybe they don't need to name, right? And instead can kind of hint at it, like say, oh, you know.
The kind.
Or just, oh, you know the person I'm talking about. You know, they did this. Or hint at it a bit more. And using Pidgin to do that. Pidgin, you know, with words like the kind,
It goes along with other protocols, kind of social protocols.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And you see that when you get the Kalafriskins, I think you call them, turning on, trying to speak Pidgin, right? And getting things wrong. So part of it is the pronunciation, the ho bra, like go beach.
I mean,
hey, bro, me like stay go your house, cow.
I mean, you've given lessons in this, Andy. Yeah, I mean, because there are websites about how to, what to do,
well,
you know.
Well, you know, when I was doing the Daily Pigeon a lot, you know, people would say, you know, what's the best way to practice my pigeon? And I'd say, at home by yourself. You know? But a way to do it, and the governor mentioned it, is you can, like, start using pow instead of finish. You can start saying not instead of I don't believe you. Try with the one-syllable words first.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Before you get into that whole hamajang thing.
Hamajang!
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, it's interesting. I traveled with Dan Inouye, and what a speaker. And he did a thing, and I used to watch him, where he spoke perfect English, but he did it with a pigeon accent.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like, when we come down to the people of Hawaii, there is a bifurcation of the tonality of the, you know, it's just like all these kind of hyperbolic words. But you go, is that pigeon or is he smart?
And that's the trick.
That's the trick.
That's the trick.
What? Use long words in a pigeon kind of way?
Well, yeah.
No, just this and that, you know.
Well, you know, my dad used to say, never mind, use that kind of hyperbolic words. You know, but here's a guy who used to say film as film, you know. But it was interesting because if you ever try to sell something on Craigslist, right, and then you get a guy and he calls you up, oi, bro, calling about the truck, what, you still selling them, right? You immediately go, yeah, bro, the thing's still going, what, you like? You know, you wouldn't go, yes, it's still available. Would you like to purchase it, you know? Oh, I'll call you back, boom.
I'll go, what, bro, you getting money?
Yeah. What?
I mean, here's a story, and I don't mean to embarrass the governor here, but I was on a flight, okay, from here to the Big Island. We were in first class, right?
Sure.
You didn't know it, but I was sitting in the seat behind you, and you were governor at the time, right?
Okay.
And you were sitting with somebody else, and I don't know who it was, but you guys were talking about hardcore state business. But it was all in pigeon. And I was going, if I had a tape recorder, you know, because you're going, ah, bro, that bugger think he gonna make appropriations and steal that. No way, bro. Hey, honest time, we go for that. That's only lose money. And we talked about this backstage. Complicated ideas can be communicated in pigeon.
Yeah.
What do you think they were talking about, Sarah, when they voted the Hawaiian accent as the number 7 sexiest?
I'm not really sure what criteria they use.
Do we talk differently here normally?
Hawaiian English, and not just only pigeon, but English as spoken in Hawaii as a whole, has a distinctive phonology, which the sound system.
Really?
And so one of the features is the lack of the R after a vowel. So, you know, or TH.
At the end, you mean?
Feta, instead of feather.
Right,
oh.
Exactly.
Feta.
Feta, right.
Oh. The bird get nice feta.
Okay. And I heard Boston accent was also rated highly on that.
Yeah.
And that also has a similar feature. So I don't know if that is relevant.
I used to think the Filipino guys at the Hanaka school was pretty sexy. You know, this yeah. They would go out there. Psst, psst. That should be number one. I don't think any Texan can do that. What do you mean?
Because it depends on how you grow up.
That's why I get so many Filipinos.
Where's Ben when you need him?
But there again are the broken shards of Hawaiian, because you speak pidgin, right, and you get the a e a o u vowel sounds, and
you
go to learn Hawaiian, mm-hmm. and you're halfway there, you know?
Well, I know in the UH Hilo, they teach in the Hawaiian language department, they have a textbook that actually uses pidgin to teach Hawaiian, because in, you know, a lot of the mistakes that people make in speaking Hawaiian is because you're thinking of it in a standard English way.
Right.
But if you think of expressing yourself in a pidgin way, that is much closer to Hawaiian. So it's actually a help to knowledge of pidgin is a help in learning Hawaiian.
I'll tell you, it can get you in trouble, though, you know, because I was at a Kamehameha band competition. My daughter was competing, okay? And the Kalani Falcons were also competing. And a lady in front of us, and we had some Haole people with us, right? Well, if you say falcon in pidgin, the A becomes round. So every time they did something good, she go, falcon pride! Oh, that's falcon good! You know? And the people with us, what is she saying? Falcon, it's pronounced falcon.
Everybody in this audience knows what we're talking about here, because we live in this soup of how we talk in Hawaii. Some of it is pidgin, some of it is not. Some words we throw in, some, you know, as our language is evolving, I mean, is there something about identity that we need to say here? As we look forward, you know, are there words that we want to preserve? Is there something that we have to think now in order to have this identifying language all between us, say 20, 50 years from now? Are there decisions that have to be made? Are there some words that we for sure want to have?
How do you control it? I don't think you can you? I mean, isn't it a cultural thing? It just naturally evolves.
And goes away. Like hamajang. It finally made it into the Oxford Dictionary, but what, in Hawaii, do people still use it?
Well, that's how you know it died.
And then I'm thinking,
also,
you know.
Also, hamajang was an Oahu word. That was not a neighbor island word. It was, we learned that coming to Honolulu. Honolulu.
Well, look at habutero.
Habutero, yeah.
What's that?
You don't know what's habutero? Darn funny, what kind of Japanese are you?
I'm a kotonk.
You know, when kids, when you...
What's happening to the language.
No, but you know, when They act all sad, like, oh, I'll let go, but I'll let go. And I call habutero.
Brother, you all habut.
It's Japanese, right?
Habut. Habutero, habut.
It's normal for all languages to change. And a language that doesn't change is a dead language. So it's important, you know, it's an important indicator of how the language remains, you know, vital. If we have new things replacing old things, that's a very natural part of language.
There are some words that are more popular now than they were before, like choke.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's a good example.
Guess what choke came from?
What?
Right? It's a fishing term. Oh. Right? Because when had plenty of fish, right? And they try to get through a small part, there's so much fish, they choke the small place. So I had choke fish.
Wow.
So, hey, what? Get fish. Oh, God, get choke fish. And then it came to, oh, what? Was the place crowded? Oh, I had choke people.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're broadcasting a Zocalo Public Square event seriously discussing Hawaiian pidgin with our panelists, scholar Sarah Roberts, Governor John Waihe'e, scholar Katie Drager, and comedian Andy Bumatai. We'll be back after a break with more on the rich history and cultural impact of our local dialect. Last month, HBR helped to facilitate a conversation about pidgin in Hawaii. We've been listening to what the Zocalo Public Square panelists had to say on the past, present, and future of local pidgin. The panelists were Sarah Roberts, sociolinguist and scholar of American Pidgin languages, Hawaii Governor John Waihe'e III, first state governor of Hawaiian ancestry, instrumental in making Hawaiian an official state language. Katie Drager, co-director of the University of Hawaii Sato Center for Pidgin, Creole, and Dialect Studies. And finally, comedian Andy Bumatai, a model pidgin speaker. I highly recommend his YouTube series, Daily Pidgin.
Has anyone said anything specific about the sort of socioeconomic relationship with pidgin?
I mean, if you speak pidgin, you're poor.
No, well, in terms of, it's like palaka.
Don't make things no say, if you're Hawaiian, you're poor.
No, but it's like palaka. Huh? It's like a palaka, a visual identifier. You know what I mean? And it creates a commonality visually when we see that.
Oh.
It's also a kind of a class identifier. And I feel like pidgin could be the same way.
Exactly. Same way.
Yeah.
It's like kinda. A tattoo.
You know, I think a lot of it, would, the class distinction would be in the vocabulary, you know, and or even the ethnic distinctions might be in the vocabulary. But what was consistent, even if you were born and raised in Hawaii, it didn't matter. Even if you went to Punahou, you got an accent that was unique to this place. I don't know how to say it. And the way you said, you spoke a perfect English sentence, I would know whether or not you came from, or I would suspect you might have come from Hawaii, just without, because you never said the TH, you never said something, you said what.
And it's
you know, like OT as opposed to what, you know? I mean, I don't even know how to say it at the moment. I mean, the English way.
But again, there's the broken shards, right? Because Hawaiian had the diphthongs, right? Where
right.
You say Waikiki. You don't say Waikiki. The A and the I are like blended and almost, the I becomes almost a ghost where it's Waikiki or Kauai. You know, that kind of Maui, you know? Mm-hmm. And then in pidgin, when that happens, the same thing. They disappear like
it's
that.
It's all sound. A lot of it is more important in some respects. I think the sound is more important in identifying somebody who is a speaker from local Hawaii than always just the vocabulary. Because some of this vocabulary stuff that we call pidgin, you know, got into the surfing culture. All the guys in California started saying the same stuff. You know?
Yeah.
And, but they were saying it kind of different.
Yeah.
You know, as Andy.
But even when governor speaks, right? I mean, think about it. I mean, he's speaking perfectly English, but he still says important.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You notice that? It's not important, it's important.
Absolutely.
Which is a subtle thing, but you know, if you're trained for it, you go, whoa.
I won't vote for him.
You got me.
I kind of hear that in the way you talk too, Katie. You know, in a way, your English is a little bit inflected with...
I picked up a couple of things. I'm not originally from Hawaii, but I picked up a couple of things. And one that I noticed even, you know, among Punahou kids like you, is the vowel in O. So in word like show, and maybe it's how someone from California might say it, but in Hawaii it'd be sho, where it's not diphthongo, it's monophthong, so it's just o, and whereas in California o. Mm-hmm. So that's one difference. But then these kind of markers also change over time. So for like the vowel a, it seems to be undergoing a shift in both pidgin and in English. That is here in Hawaii in a way that isn't happening in other dialects of English.
Huh.
So, for example, the word sand is increasingly more and more young people are saying it like sand, like really far back.
Almost an H.
Sand.
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 So wow. There are differences like this that are starting to change in the speech of both pidgin and English speakers.
You notice like local people will pronounce O-N-E and W-O-N differently. One and one.
Yeah.
You know, oh, they're about a one. Oh, how many you like? A one. You know, I don't know why. Well, you know,
this
and
is
there,
how it looks.
There are dialectal things that we do too. You ever notice, like, you never hear local people say tuna fish.
Yeah.
They say tuna. You know what I mean? They never say, you know, you people on the menu, would you like a tuna fish sandwich? No, I'll have a beef cow.
Hey, any idea how the word grind got
grind?
Going? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, grind. You know, like, but like my dad, and I think you mentioned backstage, we used to say I for,
yeah,
for E.
Yeah.
But I don't think they say that anymore.
No, they never did.
I know.
It might come
and
back.
And it's interesting, broken shards, I is E, but it also means ground,
yeah,
right? Because that's where the food comes from. So you go through, which also meant, you know, hey, how's your baby? What? You like, I. You like, go to the ground.
I get my blanket.
Oh, sorry, huh?
Get gents, you think.
How popular is cow cow these days?
How popular is cow cow?
How popular?
Nobody says it.
Really?
Cow cow.
I don't think they say cow cow. They grind, but grind. It's in a lot of restaurant names.
Yeah.
Cow cow corner.
It's still there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, cow cow has an interesting history because it originally comes from Chinese pidgin English. Chow to chow, you know, chow chow. And then it became borrowed into pidgin Hawaiian because cow cow sounds like a Hawaiian word. So people learned it thinking it was Hawaiian. And now here we have.
Tell the joke.
Oh yeah. I kind of bungled it when I told you, but this was from the 1930s. And so a farmer was trying to feed a cow what was supposed to be given to a horse. And so the joke goes, cow no can cow cow, horse cow cow, cow cow cow, cow cow cow. And I've always loved that joke.
No, in the 30s, that was killing it.
Yes.
That was the killer.
Thank you, good night.
Yeah, that was the killer.
But you know what? With the proper I hear that joke and I, eh, bro, get a cow, cow, horse, cow, cow, only cow can cow, 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 cow. Stupid.
I know.
Right? It's the inflection.
Right. Yeah. You got it.
And yet, we all know that sentiments, you know, sensitive sentiments can be expressed in pidgin as well.
Oh, yeah.
What's,
you know?
What was that? I'm sorry?
Sensitive sentiments can be expressed in pidgin as well.
Yeah.
Pidgin can be used for
Yeah, human Maki.
Maki died dead.
Maki died dead.
Well, you know, if you want to, you were talking about this earlier, where if you want to soften an idea, you know, I don't know if you remember in the movie Goodfellas, where one of the guys were going, well, you were busting his chops a little bit. Yeah, a little bit, you know, a little bit. I'll bust it. Yeah, a little bit, you know. No, were you busting my chops? Yeah, you were busting my chops. A little bit, you know what I'm saying? A little bit, right? The equivalent in Hawaiian is, oh, yeah, well, what? He was bugging you. Yeah, you know, a small kind.
Yeah.
Right? Which is yes, but I want to soften it because we don't like beef.
Yeah, right. This is so much about our local culture. What are we saying about the way we are when we say we try to minimize our, you know, our big bodiness? We try to not be as specific when we're talking stink about somebody. We try to be a little bit more vague, maybe. Because we don't want to mention the kind, you know?
Well, think about the pidgin English being recognized as a language, you know? And in my act, I tell people, I said, you know, Brasso, if you speak pidgin, from now on, you're bilingual. Because you speak English and you speak pidgin. And when you mention that you're bilingual, no forget, leave out, no, include the lingual part. Because you didn't like tell people, hey, bro, I was talking to Annie. He told me, yeah, well, I'm bi.
But,
in the 30s, that kills. But it's recognized as an actual language. Does that blow your mind?
That's what they just said.
And that's important because throughout most of the 20th century, pidgin didn't have that recognition. And in the schools, it was often thought, well, you have to get rid of pidgin in order to learn standard English. And that was just such a difficult situation for kids who come to the schools. You know, that's how their parents speak, it's all they ever heard, and now you have to give up that in order to learn standard English, which was a completely unnecessary burden to put on
kids.
And
they withdraw.
Yeah, when they could be bilingual.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Now you can come to UH and take classes about pidgin. So Ken Sakota is in the audience. I'm going to embarrass him, but he's he's a pidgin expert. He is who I go to when I have questions, and he teaches some fantastic classes on pidgin. They're extremely popular. And then also, you know, a lot of us who don't maybe teach strictly a whole class about pidgin, we accept papers written in pidgin. It's recognized in that official setting as well.
Wow.
So. Well, are these people encroaching on the side?
Yes,
well, because
we are.
It's time for us to open up the questions to the audience.
We are just about to jump into our question and answer session, but first, a round of applause for our fabulous panelists tonight.
God.
My name is Vincent Yee. I work at a hotel. And when we work together with coworkers, everything is just pidgin. It just flows naturally. And I think it's pidgin is like the lingua franca of blue-collar Hawaii. White-collar Hawaii, not so much, because you're conducting business and things like that. Do you believe that's pretty much true?
We are seeing much more white-collar workers trying to be proud of their blue-collar background. I don't know. You're probably right in the sense that the blue-collar people may be using more of the vocabulary, but I think there is a sort of a kind of a renaissance going on of we all local now, or we want to be local, you know.
There's probably an unspoken need to differentiate yourself from the others. You know what I'm saying?
Actually, it's more of a dominant thing because we have people from the mainland. We have an Iranian guy. They try to speak pidgin English to us.
Right, because he wants to be in.
Yeah, and they asked me, okay, which one speaks better English? I said, oh, the Hawaiian guy is more authentic than the Iranian guy.
Okay, can I make a comment about that too? So in the early 90s, there was a linguist at UH, late Charlie Sato. She published an article where she speculated about the future of pidgin. And one point she brought up was Hawaii's tourist economy needing workers from Southeast Asia and other places to work in like the hotel industry. And so she speculated that the use of pidgin would actually increase to some extent among this population because that's the kind of English they learn from other people. And so even though we have the situation of like Hawaii being part of, you know, being the 50th state and with a lot of Haoles coming from the mainland, that's not the only thing that's happening.
Next question is on your left.
Aloha, Joey Char. And I was wondering, how can we call it pidgin and not minor bird or parakeet or something else?
It actually comes from Chinese pidgin English, and it's the Chinese pronunciation of the word business. It was business English. That's the kind of English that they used to conduct trade in the 1700s,
1800s. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
It's Chinese?
Boy, you're really bilingual.
Oh, man, we're bilingual like that.
Next question.
Cool. Oh, here we go.
Hi, my name's Sandy Tsukiyama, and I'm a Portuguese speaker, and this question is basically for the researchers. That how much credit is the Portuguese language given to its input on why pidgin is what it is? because I have a whole list. I have a whole list, and we collaborated with Kent Sacoda and local Portuguese historian Herbert Carlos. We came up with a lot.
I would be very interested to hear that, because I'm going to Portugal next month, where I'm going to be talking about that topic. So I know Edgar Knowlton in the 1960s published an article about Portuguese and pigeon and identified a number of features. And I regard Portuguese as probably the second most influential language on pigeon besides Hawaiian. So
If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, Professor, one of the big influences was Juan. They would say, like, una carta, like for one letter, there's una carta on the table, there's one letter on the table. Where in pigeon, you get one letter on the table, right? So the one, in fact, and how I know this is I sold pigeon English magnets so you could go on your refrigerator, right? And I forgot to put one. And you know how many letters? Yeah. How are you gonna make one sentence if no more one?
I'm gonna slap your head.
And I think that was, is it Spanish or Portuguese that had the one?
It's also Hawaiian. Yeah. Hawaiian has one, kekahim something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pigeon form of the Hawaiian language uses akahi in exactly the same way.
Exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what's a better way to call your friend stupid than baboos?
Now there's another good word that we have that much longer.
A Portuguese word, baboos.
It's from the word baboso, which means drooling. So like the word for aloe vera, the word for the aloe vera plant, as we call it, aloe over here, you know, when you break it off, it drools, right?
Yeah.
The name for that plant is baboso, baboza or baboso. And so a person like a drooling idiot, like that.
The
so
baboon.
And because the language of the Azores was influenced by Flemish settlers, it became different from baboso. So that's why they say garut instead of garoto, and they say boa noite instead of boa noite, and for good evening or good night. And so the Azorean pronunciation came into, you know, what we know. So baboos is definitely a loan word.
Wow. That was a Portuguese answer.
Yeah. I've got a question for Kent Sacoda, if no one else does. Kent, so glad you're here. You know, what are some current issues in pigeon, and what do students... What are students interested in your classes?
Wow, I wasn't even expect this. I was going to hide out the video. I'm sorry, I get the question.
Okay, yeah, what are contemporary issues in pigeon?
Well, really contemporary ones are the fact that I think a lot of people are not aware of when they're using pigeon anymore. So it's sort of like a mixture of English and pigeon. And that's, it's not really a problem, but I think that adds to the change, I think, in the language. It's something that we have to deal with, and Katie knows that we've had this conversation a lot before in terms of, she does a lot of research in Hawaii English, so the English dialect is spoken here, as opposed to the pidgin is spoken here. And so I ask her always, you know, how do you know when one ends and the other begins, you know? How can you tell the difference? And that's something that we're dealing with, I think, now. There's tremendous stuff. But can I make a comment about what Sandy said earlier about Portuguese? So the Portuguese influence, we don't know so much because, here's the reason, there's not as many loan words in pidgin from Portuguese. Same thing with the Chinese. Okay, so the Chinese, Portuguese were early on, right? Of course, the Hawaiians were here, but the Portuguese and the Chinese were early immigrant laborers here. And so you would expect a lot more loan words, but there's not a whole lot of it. Oh, sorry. Anyway, so the long story short is that there's this thing called loan translations, calcs, that are not, so you use, you borrow the concept from the other language, you borrow the concept from Portuguese, but you use the pidgin word or the English word from pidgin for that thing there. And so it sounds weird English, but in fact it comes from that language, so.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much. Boy, that was a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone for coming, and everybody walked out speaking pidgin. If you want to watch the entire discussion, we'll have a link to the video posted at hawaiipublicradio.org. If you missed any of the show or want a past one, find them on the conversation page with links to more information about guests and topics. Just look under HPR News and Talk for the conversation on hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Noe Tanigawa. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.